I'm a sales director with an MBA, over 10 years experience, who's also fluent in Japanese.
With Indeed, you can add screener questions for a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates.
Arigato.
Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
The Trump administration has given Canada until today to hash out its differences with the U.S. regarding a new trade deal. Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland, says the sort of deal that Canadians are looking for.
We're looking for a good deal, not just any deal. And we will only agree to a deal that is a good deal for Canada. We're not there yet.
At least 7 people were killed and more than 40 were injured after a semi-truck and Greyhound bus collided on a busy New Mexico highway yesterday. 49 people were on board the bus, and this good Samaritan says he did what he could when he arrived on the scene.
Got out of my truck, grabbed some gloves, and started getting out there and started helping people. Seeing that many people, it was very chaotic.
The bus was headed from St. Louis to Los Angeles, and the initial reports say the semi-truck blew out one of its tires and swerved across the median. Aretha Franklin's celebration of life continues. The entire funeral is expected to go right around 5 hours. This is USA Radio News.
I've been telling you for a year how great MyPillow is. Well, guess what? There's a great deal on MyPillow.com. You can get 4 pillows for about the price of 1 MyPillow. Click on the 4-pack special when you go to MyPillow.com. Enter promo code USA. You'll get 2 MyPillow premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows, perfect for travel, for half off. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, enter promo code USA, but do it now.
Some Democrats are up in arms over the fact that In-N-Out Burger donated to Republicans. Now they also donate to Democrats as well. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee joined Fox News to remind the Democrats of one thing.
How about the millions of dollars that companies like Google and Apple and Starbucks all give to the Democratic National Committee? I don't know of one Republican that is calling for a national boycott that all Republicans and conservatives would quit buying their products. That's the difference, though, David, between Democrats and Republicans. If you don't agree with them, they don't want to just beat you in the election. They want to put you out of business. Republicans say, gosh, we'd like to win your business. Maybe we'll do better next time. In-N-Out is a great burger. It's a great product. Whenever I go to California, I make sure that I go to In-N-Out Burger because I think they're a terrific company.
A Chicago area theme park announces a plan to build a one-of-a-kind roller coaster. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Six Flags Great America announcing that the new roller coaster will be able to accelerate from 0 to 78 miles an hour in less than 2 seconds. The new attraction will be called Max Force. It's scheduled to open next summer at the park in Gurnee, Illinois. Park officials say it will be the fastest launch coaster in North America. Its custom coaster trains will be modeled after Formula One racing cars. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, good afternoon. Beginning of Labor Day weekend, end of the summer, and not great weather. What a shame. Especially, hopefully, it'll be better at the shore. But this afternoon, there's an 80% chance of showers. I think it's 100%. Started earlier today in Washington. If any of you were watching Senator McCain's casket going into the Capitol building, the rotunda, it was pouring, and now it's been showering later this afternoon and off and on pouring. So tonight, that's going to be the same, showers 60%. And then it will be likely be isolated showers later tonight, about a 20% chance of showers tomorrow. So that may be actually the better day of the weekend, because on Sunday there's a 20% or 30% chance of showers, and then a 40% chance of thunderstorms. Temperature tomorrow about high of about 80. So if you're planning on being outside tomorrow, that slight chance of showers is better than what is predicted on Sunday. I have heard that there are certain areas down at the shore where there are a lot of biting flies. So that's another problem. By Labor Day, we have a chance of showers between 9 and 3. Then again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. However, it might be partly sunny into Monday night. Again, a chance of showers. It's not a total washout for the weekend, but certainly not great. And again, into Tuesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. But it should be mostly sunny with a high of about 90 degrees. So that actually may be one of the better days if you're trying to take a day off. So what's happening other than that? Well, I'm Pat Smits, and the program is It's the Law. Today, I have to comment, if you haven't been watching any of the services for Senator John McCain, hope you have an opportunity to do that. Yesterday, not taking away from any of the eulogies in Arizona, but I thought that former Vice President Biden and he was a former colleague of John McCain was especially touching, and it really should have reminded all of us when politics, not that they were easy, and in fact some of the years were very tumultuous. Certainly in the 60s, but if we know anything about history and politics in the Senate, there were some what we would consider lions of the Senate. Of course, Barry Goldwater on one side, someone like former Senator Kennedy, who was very liberal. You had Senator Biden, who from Delaware, I think he was elected senator the first time when he was about 29 years old. So he served in the Senate for many, many years. And he served and was a great friend of Senator McCain, who was on the other side. Obviously, he was a Republican, congressman, and then senator. And, of course, most of us who were alive back then at the end of the Vietnam War remember him coming back with the other prisoners of war from Hanoi. And he was pretty amazing. I don't know much about his history before that, although I know he was an airman. I think he flew about 23 missions before he was shot down near Hanoi. I visited Hanoi at one point, and in fact, it was about, I think it was in 1999, it was when he was running against, now I'm blanking. He was running against Bush for president. I'm sorry if I'm missing something here. But I do remember going to the prison in Hanoi, sitting in his cell. Everybody in Vietnam knew Senator McCain. And not only Senator McCain, but the other POWs, they had great respect for how the Americans handled themselves. They respected them. Of course, they didn't like them, and they fought against them, and they were terrible, and they were brutalizing them when they were in prison. But Senator McCain came out of that ordeal, obviously had concerns about continuing in the military as his father and grandfather had. They were both four-star generals. And he went into politics. And he really was remarkable. He took over from Senator Goldwater, who was, of course, very, very conservative. And one of the things that I'll never forget is the roads in Arizona. And I might talk about that a little bit on the sports program because it had to do with us trying to get to a sporting event. But for whatever your politics, he was certainly one of the last of a breed. And for him to be lying in state is a fitting tribute. I didn't realize that only 30, and I think it's all men, have had that honor. I think I only know three of them. But I think it was Lincoln who was the first one. And, of course, one of the very sad times when I was very young, it was John Kennedy. So in any event, I think it was tribute to him, and tomorrow there will be another service in Washington before he's buried in Annapolis at the Naval Academy there. So whatever your politics, I hope you have some opportunity to see or hear, I should say, hear and see the eulogy that Joe Biden gave yesterday, because it truly was very moving. And this, of course, is someone who also has had great losses in his life. So tomorrow, the people who are speaking, of course, are the two men, and they were invited, that President Obama and President, the second President Bush. And that is pretty, you know, amazing that they would be the two invited. And today, actually, Senator McCain wanted both the leadership from the Democratic Party and the leadership from the Republican Party to place the congressional wreath and the Senate wreath at that service. So it was very moving. It really was. And one of the things that I think our children and our young people, you know, don't realize that politics at one point was a little more admirable than it seems to be today. And then, of course, there was this rousing funeral. I think it's still going on, the celebration of Aretha Franklin's life. Aretha died at age 76, and this was the memorial tribute to her. And, I mean, the Faith Hills, it was just unbelievable. As you can see, I haven't done a lot of work for the last couple of days. Been watching a lot of television. Actually, I taped what went on yesterday and taped some of what's going on today, but did watch some of what went on today in both the Senator McCain and Aretha Franklin. And, of course, the Aretha Franklin is one of a kind. She truly was the queen, and the people coming out and the tributes to her were just amazing. The singing and the joy, and that's one of the things that I appreciate, the joy in a funeral. I really loved what was going on for the celebration for Aretha, and it really was joyous. But I do have to also comment that it was very moving to see the see and hear the Navajo flutist yesterday at John McCain's funeral. And, of course, there was the bagpipes, and there was a boys' choir, and they sang the, I think it's called Arizona, the song about Arizona. And he was beloved and, you know, and respected, and certainly respected by everyone, even people who did not agree with him politically. And I think most people don't really appreciate his sense of humor, because apparently he had a wicked sense of humor. So it was very interesting to see his family and all the friends, as well as politicians, that celebrated his life. Actually, it was a celebration of his life. So in any event, let me play a few spots from the sponsors and then tell you what's happening in news in New Jersey.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Well, again, I'm back, and I'm not even sure I introduced myself when we started the program or when I started the program this afternoon. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. My practice is limited to a wide variety of family law matters, so that I don't talk about that every week. And I do try to bring you up to date on some of the interesting cases, or at least cases that have some impact in our law. And, of course, one of the things that this is the last day of August, and what happens for those of us who are attorneys who appear in court is there will be a new rotation, and not all judges change every year, but generally that's when judges are rotated. And the idea in New Jersey, although I don't agree with it, is that when a judge is appointed, he or she will rotate through all of the divisions, the family division, the civil division, the criminal division, during their first 7 years. Frankly, I have had concerns about it. I don't think it's a good idea. I think that one of the real problems is very often, or not very often, what usually happens is new judges who are appointed are sent to family. Now, sometimes it works out beautifully, but it's very difficult for lawyers who are appointed who've never handled family matters. It is such an important area, and some of them do beautifully. There is a judge who now has been on family since he was appointed. He's going to be transferred, Frankly, I wish, this is a judge in this vicinage, I wish he was staying in family because he really has done an excellent job. And in part, I think it's because he's an experienced or was an experienced lawyer. He understands, he's practical, and he really can help lawyers and litigants settle their cases. And that truly should be the goal in every family law case. And I say that as someone who probably tries as many cases as most other attorneys. But these cases should be settled for everyone. It is no one wins when there's a trial. First of all, judges can't do what we can do when we help our clients settle. We can be much more creative than the judges are able to be. For example, a judge can't award a lump sum alimony. And in many cases, that's an appropriate way to handle it if there's going to be alimony, rather than having the payor continue to pay year after year. So there are just a lot of things that we can do. Frankly, I think in my experience, there are times where we can help our clients do some tax planning that it's just not going to happen if the case is tried. But that's not what I wanted to focus on today. I will focus on one case that was a contractual dispute, very interesting for attorneys, because in New Jersey, all attorneys need written retainer agreements signed by the client. In my practice, I don't think I have ever had a client sit in my office the first time I meet them and sign a retainer agreement. Even if it's an emergent matter, I require them to take the retainer agreement, take it somewhere, possibly look it over by another attorney if they want to, and then sign it, and we can talk about any of the terms. Because this is the contract that you or a litigant has with their attorney. And it's very important in my mind that someone have time to read it. And frankly, if they're not going to retain me, I'd rather know it right then and not have them come back with a retainer agreement rather than later on have some questions about it. But in any event, this case, Belducci versus, and I think I'm not sure how you pronounce the name, it's CIGE. And this was an appellate division case, which means, of course, that there was a trial court decision. And in this case, the defendant attorney appealed the order declaring his retainer agreement with the plaintiff void and unenforceable, not something that anybody wants to have happen. So what happened in this case is the plaintiff retained the defendant attorney to represent her in a law against discrimination action, but later terminated his representation and retained new counsel. So one of the things that's very important when you have a retainer agreement is to spell out exactly what happens if the client decides to terminate the relationship and retain new counsel. In these cases, as an attorney, if someone decides to retain new counsel, I have to turn over my file to that attorney. I can't say you have to pay me first. I either have to turn the file over or make arrangements for the entire file to be copied. And I think that's what most of us do because we really need to keep copies of our files. But that is a requirement in New Jersey. An attorney must turn over the file to the new attorney. Now, that was not the issue here. But in this case, the attorney billed what I'm reading is incorrect as far as what happened, but I'm having some problems here because they switched who was plaintiff and defendant. But in any event, the attorney billed the plaintiff for $286,000 in fees and expenses, and his lien against any recovery impeded settlement negotiations. Obviously, if she owed that much money, to a prior attorney, it's going to be difficult to settle the case. So in that case, the plaintiff, and it should have said defendant, billed her for $286,000. So in this case, the plaintiff filed a declaratory judgment, and that is she went to court, filed a declaratory judgment asking to have the retainer agreement declared unenforceable. So that she had the right to do that, obviously. And then the parties disputed the circumstances under which the plaintiff signed the agreement. And apparently the agreement also included an hourly fee and a contingency fee. Now, the plaintiff contends that the lawyer did not explain the terms, but merely told her it was a standard agreement and that she would not owe legal fees if the case was lost. So then when the plaintiff terminated the defendant attorney's services, he billed her for time expended at his hourly rate. Now, the trial court found that a reasonable client would have understood the agreement was a contingent fee agreement and that she would only pay if she was successful. However, the attorney failed to communicate otherwise and failed to communicate how expensive the matter could ultimately be based on an hourly rate. And the court found that the record supported the meaning now we're talking about the appellate court. The appellate court found that the record supported the trial court's decision. The appellate court also noted that in the absence of a statutory fee award, an attorney's hourly fee could exceed the client's recovery, and that such a fee arrangement undermined the law against discrimination policy, because that happens to be one kind of case where there's a fee shifting, and so that the plaintiffs in those cases should not have to pay fees. The fees come out of their successful suit. So in other words, that that was a case that was published, so that's important. There was a legal malpractice case in family law that, of course, all of us family lawyers look at, and that was not published, however, so it's not precedent. But it is an interesting case from the standpoint of what happens when there is a malpractice claim filed. And one of the real concerns that most attorneys have is clients file malpractice because they don't want to pay fees, and it really should be a fee dispute. But in any event, in this case, there was a summary judgment granted the attorneys based on the plaintiff's legal malpractice claim. So what happened here is the plaintiff retained the defendants to represent her in her divorce. And then the plaintiff and her ex-husband entered a property settlement agreement that provided the plaintiff wife with limited duration alimony in exchange for $150,000 credit from her ex-husband's share of equity in the marital home. So the plaintiff agreed to purchase her ex-husband's interest in the home, and he agreed to pay off an outstanding home equity loan and also pay off the plaintiff's credit card debt. The property settlement agreement also distributed to the plaintiff 40% of her ex-husband's capital account with his employer. Now, the property settlement agreement did not address distribution of the unfunded modified partner retirement plan. So before the trial court, the plaintiff acknowledged that she was cutting her losses by entering into the property settlement agreement. Interesting term. So apparently she acknowledged on the record at the divorce hearing that she was cutting her losses by entering into the property settlement agreement. and she subsequently unsuccessfully moved to modify the property settlement agreement, asserting that changed circumstances warranted modification of alimony. Now, she later hired a new attorney and moved to vacate the property settlement agreement, arguing that she was mentally impaired and did not comprehend its terms. She further alleged that the defendant, meaning her prior attorneys who represented her in the divorce, failed to properly counsel her or protect her interests. So what happened is then 6 years after that motion was denied, she filed the present complaint alleging defendants counseled her to accept settlement that did not reflect the range of likely recovery and also failed to account for her mental incapacity. Now, the attorneys moved for summary judgment, arguing that the terms of the property settlement agreement were motivated by the plaintiff's desire to retain the marital home. And the trial court granted the motion, ruling the plaintiff's allegations of malpractice were based on pure speculation. Well, that's not unusual, unfortunately. On appeal, the appellate court affirmed, ruling that although the trial court erred in concluding no jury could determine whether plaintiff would have negotiated a more favorable settlement had the defendants provided her with more adequate legal advice, the plaintiff's expert offered mere net opinion. In other words, when a case like this, you have to have expert, and an expert has to provide a valid expert report. And in this case, it was just a net opinion that would not satisfy the court that he would be a qualified expert based on the opinion he gave. So, interesting case. So what else is happening? Well, we understand now that municipal prosecutors, the Attorney General has told municipal prosecutors that they cannot unilaterally decriminalize possession and use of small amounts of marijuana. However, they can use their discretion to dismiss cases if they believe as evidence is lacking or the consequences of settling may be too harsh. Interesting. There are going to be a lot of these cases. And one of the things that has to be a real concern is driving under the influence, because it's not just of alcohol. It's driving under the influence of drugs, and especially since marijuana is so commonly used, under the influence of marijuana. There was a trial judge also this week. I believe the municipality was Lodi, and what happened is now that people have GPSs, they try to find the shortest way, and one of the problems, at least to this town and the neighborhood, is that their GPSs were directing them through, directing people through these neighborhoods, and what the town tried to do is enact an ordinance, pass a law, just municipal law, that non-residents could not travel on certain streets during rush hour. Well, that was thrown out by a Superior Court judge, as one would expect. So unfortunately, everybody can commiserate with the people who had difficulty getting out of their driveways because there was so much traffic on these side streets. But on the other hand, we can't have municipalities just deciding to block off roads to people who don't live in that area. Now, I guess it would be interesting if they decided to put in some toll roads, because some people would argue, certainly anyone from California would argue, that it's unfair for the communities along the shore to charge beach access. But that is, of course, permitted in New Jersey. So we don't have free beaches, which is not the case in California and Oregon. their beaches are, you know, public beaches are in fact public beaches. Not sure who pays for the cleanup of the beaches or all of the other, you know, costs to those beach communities in those states. But in fact, that is something that they recognize should be available to all people without charge. Well, there was a another case which may or may not be of interest to some people that was approved for publication. It was a creditor and debtor's right consumer protection case. It was a Third Circuit case, Levins versus Health Revenue Recovery Group. And in this case, the plaintiffs appealed from the defendant's motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. So the defendant said, wait, there's not even any claim in this case for which the court can proceed. So the plaintiffs alleged that the defendant violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act by leaving telephone messages that did not use defendant's true name and failed to meaningfully disclose its identity and otherwise used false representations and also deceptive means to collect a debt or obtain information about a consumer. Well, I think that all of us probably can relate, or most of us can relate, to getting calls. And in fact, getting calls and getting letters. In fact, I just got a postcard telling me that I really needed to urgently call this number because the warranty, the manufacturer's warranty on my vehicle was about to expire. Well, and of course, it came in my name, not my husband Dave's name. And we had to laugh because the vehicles that are in my name are vintage cars, so that obviously there's no manufacturer's warranty. And one of the other vehicles is new enough that we still have the manufacturer's warranty, and it's not about to expire. So again, it would be very easy for someone, and if this had come in my husband's name, I think we knew enough because the vehicle was that new, but someone else might pick up the phone and, you know, get sold as warranty, whether or not they needed it, etc., and without any understanding of just what is covered under the warranty. I'm not saying that these are not, it's not valid to have warranties, and obviously this is something that the dealerships try to sell you when you buy the car, but you need to look at it to see if it makes sense in your case. But here, this is a little different. The plaintiffs allege that the defendants violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act by leaving those messages, etc. And specifically, they allege that the defendant used the name ARG, which plaintiffs contended was insufficient to identify defendant by its legal name of Healthcare Revenue Recovery Group. So in other words, when they called, they said they were ARG, and or its alternative business name, ARS, Account Resolution Services. So what happened is on appeal, the Third Circuit reversed in part the dismissal of plaintiff's complaint. And the Third Circuit, this is of course federal court, ruled that plaintiffs had stated a plausible claim that defendant violated the true name. So in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, they have to use the true name provision, and there is a provision in that act. And the court noted that ARS was not defendant's full legal business name or a commonly used acronym or shorthand form of its trade name. So I think, for example, if somebody called and said they were from ABC or NBC or CBS, in fact, probably many people don't even know the full name, what NBC stands for, because we usually have always used the acronym, or in this case, the initials. So, but the case I'm talking about, the court further noted that plaintiff's allegations that the acronym ARS was used by multiple debt collection companies and could refer to hundreds of companies registered to do business in New Jersey. However, the court affirmed the dismissal of plaintiff's claims that defendant did not meaningfully disclose its identity and used deceptive means to collect debts and to obtain consumer information by forcing recipients of defendant's phone calls to visit a website to ascertain defendant's true identity. On that count, the court found defendant's phone call provided enough information for the least sophisticated debtor to conclude the call was from a debt collector attempting to collect a debt. So that was what was significant. There'd be no question that it was a debt collector. And the court ruled that meaningful disclosure of the caller's identity specifically referred to information that the call was from a debt collector rather than the legal or business name of the collector. So, you know, if you get calls, most of them have this packaged information that it's from a debt collector, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't have to give their really specific name as long as you're advised that it is a debt collector calling to collect a debt and that any information that you give will be used in that regard. So the point is, when you get calls, if you get calls, don't give information. In fact, don't ever give personal information. At least my view is don't ever give personal information over the phone to anyone who calls, because what it can lead to is identity theft. It can lead to any number of things. And we all have to be very careful and very concerned about this. My daughter just called me and indicated that apparently someone had somehow lifted her credit card number and read up thousands of dollars worth of charges that are not hers. And so now she's has to go through this whole thing about showing and working with the credit card company. I think actually it was her credit union. And we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. None of the charges were hers. And of course, they didn't have as the security that I've seen on cards when somebody has tried to use my card, because the usual thing is they'll try to use it at a gas station, and then if it goes through, they'll go on to buy other things. But it is something that I learned that we all should personally look at our credit card statements when they come in, and don't assume that your spouse has bought something. And in my case, often I can't assume that my staff, if I have a staff person who pays my bills, I have to look at the credit cards. And I have to check to make sure that if something, I don't recognize something, that I check with the staff person who does purchasing to make sure that we really, really did purchase this. And I've learned from experience, not a good experience, that I have to look at things like this. And in fact, had someone double charge me for auto repairs, and at the time I wasn't really looking that carefully. And so in any event, that was something that I'm trying to get better at, and we all should. So what else? Let me play a few more spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back and talk a little bit more about some of the things that is going on. And I know there were some administrative law cases. In fact, one against Township of Washington that I may talk about.
sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, back, and actually this is an administrative law case that I think might be of interest to some people in this area. The case was Kona versus Township of Washington, and it's an appellate division case. The plaintiffs in that case appealed from the dismissal of their complaints, which alleged that the defendants, meaning Township of Washington, the ordinances requiring plaintiffs to pay certain license fees were ultra-virus. So what happened is the ordinances required landlords to secure a license by having rental units inspected for code compliance and payment of an annual license fee. So the trial court granted the defendant municipality's motion to dismiss. The trial court concluded that the ordinances at issue were different from the ordinances that the court had overturned in another case, and that was Timber Glen Phase 3 LLC versus the Township of Hamilton. And that is a reported case, another case that was similar. In Timber Glen, the court concluded that a municipality's power to regulate and license did not include the power to require a license and payment of a fee because the Licensing Act prohibited licensing of long-term rental units. So as a result, that rendered any municipal licensing ordinance that was simply a means of rent-a-view generation. So that was what the problem was. In other words, they can't just have an ordinance and a license because they want to raise money. So in the present case against Township of Washington, the trial court noted that the ordinances at issue required landlords to comply with regulations rather than just pay a fee, as was the case against Hamilton Township. So on appeal, the appellate division affirmed dismissal of plaintiff's actions. The court ruled that the fees charged under the ordinance were reasonably related to defendants' exercise of their regulatory and police powers. So the court held that the Licensing Act's prohibition on license fees for long-term rentals did not preclude municipalities from exercising their right to require inspection of such units or to charge a fee to fund the cost of inspections and issuance of license. And they said that so long as those fees were not merely an attempt to produce revenue. So finally, to afford future confusion, the court remanded for entry of an order directing defendants to strike reference to the fees as license fees in favor of a registration or inspection designation. So the problem was they can't call it license fees. It's an inspection fee, which anybody building anything runs into. And in this case, this was going to be an inspection fee, and that was why it was permitted. So there were a number of other cases that might be of interest, but they were really not published. One might, even though it's not published, the plaintiff appealed a judgment for defendants in his breach of warranty, breach of contract, and Consumer Fraud Act action. And this was over alleged damage to his airplane. Okay, so that was dismissed, and apparently plaintiff had purchased a used airplane, and the manufacturer recommended its distributor as a repair service. So the engine was shipped to a distributor and repaired. The manufacturer became aware of 55 cylinders contaminated during manufacturing and attempted to notify purchasers. Plaintiff asserted he was never notified and demanded a new engine, but the defendant would only repair or replace the defective cylinders as called for in its warranty. So the plaintiff asserted the manufacturer's defective cylinders damaged the engine and sought a new one and consequential damages. So the defendant's expert testified that there was no evidence of contamination in plaintiff's engine and no evidence of a lack of airworthiness. Of course, you know, when you think about it, who would want to try it? But that was what the testimony was. And the plaintiff in that case challenged the admission of a spreadsheet as a business record. So that business records can be introduced into evidence, and it's important that they be introduced as business records as far as under rules of evidence rules. But that's more than we need to go into here. In any event, the trial judge conducted what we call a New Jersey Rules of Evidence 104 hearing and agreed that the testimony established the foundation requirements for admission of the spreadsheet. So in other words, the spreadsheet was admitted based on the witness's testimony. And the court also disagreed with plaintiff that the jury instructions regarding affirmative misrepresentations were confusing, or that the instructions misstated the law of warranties. So the import of defense counsel's remark regarding plaintiff's lack of an expert witness was that plaintiff failed to rebut defendant's expert and was proper. So the record contained ample reasons to support the taxing of costs against the plaintiff. So that is, in that case, apparently the plaintiff ended up having to pay costs, and that can be significant, of course. So the there's a suit accusing a New Jersey law firm of using Google's marketing services to hijack a competitor's clients. That has been dismissed after the law firm agreed not to engage in such tactics any longer. What else? The U.S. District Judge Kevin McNulty of the District of New Jersey denied Bath Iron's motion to dismiss third-party claims against it, lodged by DVL Inc., a New York real estate company. And the New York real estate company paid $19 million to remediate contamination at the Kearney site. And that was at 16194 Passaic Avenue, and the Congolium Inc., which is accused in a suit of causing the contamination. So that, huge problems when there's contamination. Unbelievably expensive to remediate. And in some cases, it probably can't be remediated. Apparently, there was a I'm not so sure that would be. It had to deal with solar, but it wasn't actually that impressive. And I might actually read it be able to talk about it with some knowledge next week if I find that it is of any interest to people who listen. Now, the appellate division judges Accurso and Veronia said that while Lepatcong was organized under the Faulkner Act, which presumes a strong mayoral form of government, all appointments must be made with the advice and consent of the township council, so that the mayor can't just go out and make appointments. Now, the other there's going to be a seminar looking at or related to medical marijuana, because apparently thousands of patients have joined the state's medical marijuana program since Governor Murphy took office. And so that the concern is that attorneys will likely find themselves counseling clients involved with cannabis in New Jersey. So there's going to be a program, The Ethics of Cannabis, on September 7th. There's a problem now for employers in New Jersey in the area of substance-related challenges, because since it's been legalized for marijuana, in all of those states where it's been legalized for medical and or recreational use or decriminalized. So, one more thing employers have to, look into, make sure that they're not violating anyone's rights, etc. So what else? I guess actually that's probably about as far as we're going to be able to go. There's some other cases. Next week I don't think there's going to be much, because it's a short week. So some of these things we'll be able to possibly talk about next week, and hopefully you'll have a great weekend, and even though we're not expected to have great weather. So I'm Pat Smits, and hope you got something out of this program, and remember, if you have an opportunity to take a look at what Joe Biden had to say yesterday, and about Senator McCain, and just in general. Let's get politics back to some sense of decorum in the future.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families.
Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
Senator John McCain is lying in state at the